Good morning, Roundup fans and fellow seekers. My name is Damon and I am an alcoholic. Welcome to the workshop on steps 6 and 7, and this is my good friend Dana.
My name is Dana, real alcoholic, glad to be here.
What we're looking at doing here is going through 6 and 7, and Bill talks about this as being the step that separates the men from the boys. And I find out that as people develop and mature in the program, 6 and 7 begin to get larger and larger and larger, and they do for me. And there's a larger and larger emphasis on 6 and 7 because what it means, and we're going to go through that. So the way we're looking at setting this up, I do have this for the slides because we're going to be going over a lot of the literature. We're going to be looking at the literature itself, so I don't need a lot of people, you know, fumbling around because we're going between the big book and the 12 and 12. We're first going to look at 6 and 7 in the big book, and then we're going to go through 6 and 7. I picked out some paragraphs out of the 12 and 12 for 6 and 7, and to go through that and explore a little bit. So with that, I'm going to start off with the preparation for 6 and 7, which is on the bottom of page 75. And I'll go ahead and read, and then Dana will take one, and we'll go back and forth. So returning home, we find a place where we can be quiet for an hour. That's a miracle for an alcoholic anyway, right? You'd had to have done something in the steps up to that point to be able to be quiet for an hour, you know? The squirrel isn't running 100% of the time in the head, you know? So I think that's amazing. Carefully reviewing what we have done, which is the steps going through 1 through 5. And we thank God from the bottom of our heart that we know Him better. Taking this book down from our shelf, we turn to the page which contains the 12 steps. Carefully reading the first 5 proposals, we ask if we have omitted anything, for we are building an arch through which we shall walk a free man at last. And in various places in the big book, Bill uses this metaphor of the arch. He talks about when we're talking about there is a solution in the shipwreck, and he said this fellowship is a cement which binds us together. And there is a keystone through the triumphant arch, which is talked about in when we make the decision in step 3. And there's a foundation that he talks about in another part. So it's just a little fun little metaphor that he has about this arch to which we walk to freedom. And in the 12, and in the 9th step, it talks about a new freedom and a new happiness. And I remember going to the jail, and I see these guys marching in their waist chains and the handcuffs, you know, and we were taking meetings in there, and I'm walking behind them, a free man, thank goodness. But I see that they had their old idea of freedom was do what I want to do when I want to do it. And Cobb County had a different definition of freedom than what they had, you know, which is practice these principles in all my affairs. Or on page 552, it's actually a quote from Chuck Chamberlain. It says, the only real freedom a human being can ever know is doing what you ought to do because you want to do it. And I don't know about you, but with me, I had this, I knew I ought to be doing this, but I really wanted to be doing this. But I want, this is my stage character I want the world to present, you know, to see me as. And gradually through the program, I get to where what I ought to do and what I want to do become closer and closer. So that's this free man part. And man, is it freeing. Is our work solid so far? Are the stones properly in place? Have we skimped on the cement put into the foundation? Have we tried to make mortar without sand? Dana.
Yeah, I mean, you know, when you look at this, you know, and when you think about what you've done so far, you know, I mean, you know, we've done a lot of work to get to this point, you know what I mean? And that's why they ask us to take down the book and kind of review what we've done so far. You know, you've been through the forwards, you've been through the prefaces, you've been through Bill's story, you've been through More About Alcoholism, you've been through There's a Solution. There's a lot of information that we've been through. And, you know, for me, I always want to make sure, like when I go through it with my sponsees and stuff like that, I'm like, go home and just think about it, you know, just write it down. What does step 1 mean to you? What is step 2, step 3, step 4, step 5? You know, so you're in good shape, you know, so you know you're ready to take step 6. And, you know, Damon had commented on it a little bit earlier. You know, to me, the longer I've been sober, 6 and 7, the road gets narrower. You know, it gets more narrow. You know, and I enjoy the life that I'm in, and I love the life that I'm living. And the thing is, it's like, what when I feel that disease or something about myself, I look at 6 and 7, like, what am I not doing? What is character defect is jumping up to get me? You know, and it's inevitable. And we'll talk a little bit later when we talk about the 7th step and stuff like that on, you know, what we can do about these things and how we progress forward with it. So, yeah, that's about it for me on this part.
Okay. So here we come to the top of 76, and it's really one of the shortest discussions of any of the steps in the book. And fortunately, you know, Bill does expand upon it, but it's pretty simple concept. If we can answer to our satisfaction, we then look at step 6. We have emphasized willingness as being indispensable. You know, I came in, and the first meeting I went to, my sister called me up afterwards, and she said, how long are you going to have to go to those AA meetings? And I said, the rest of my life. I don't know where that willingness came from. Like I said, I do the jail meetings a lot, and I see guys coming in and out. One guy was in there 42 times. And I go, how can I take credit for this willingness? I really can't. It's a gift. If you've got it, you know, I just suggest you hold on. You know, because it's so, the huge difference is, if I got somebody who's willing, I can really help them out. When somebody's not willing, there's not much I can do. And last night, I got a chance to go, and we had a guy deep in his cups. And he had double-digit sobriety at one time. And he's sitting on the couch, and he's looking out his garage, door open there. It's like Plato's cave or something, you know. And there he is with the couch with the cigarette burn holes in it. And we got down on our knees beside there, and I said, you know, I can't get you, I can't manufacture the willingness, you know. And he wasn't going to go to the hospital, but I suggested that the only way I could think of is to take an ounce in every 3 hours and wean yourself off. It's rare that it's happened, but it's happened before. Got a text. He at 10:30 last night. He still hadn't had a drink. So I don't know. But we don't know. And here I am. I came in as an atheist. And my one solution at that time for him is we got down on our knees, the three of us that were there, and we prayed. Because that's the gift. You see, this thing is a miracle. And I can't explain it anymore, and I don't try to. So this idea, if we are we now ready to let God remove from us all the things which we have admitted are objectionable? So that seems to be part of that whole process. What are those things in me? The things I used to think were assets turned out to be, you know, I thought my quick wit was an asset. Turns out not a lot of people agreed. You know, can he now take them all, everyone? And we're not just talking about the alcoholic obsession. We're talking about any of those things that get me restless, irritable, and discontent. If we cling to something we will not let go of, we ask God to help us be willing. And that's the one I cannot manufacture. It almost has to me to be a gift. Dana?
You know, when I look at step 6, you know, I mean, it's such a big step. You know, it's so much to do, and it's only like a half a paragraph in the big book. You know, you get into 12 and 12, and there's a lot more information. But, you know, when I go through step 6, and we're talking about it, and when we're going through the big book, I look at, you know, your life beforehand, and, you know, excuse me, all of your life has been run by these character defects, if you think about it. You know, if you look at your 4-step and your 5th step, and you look at these resentments and all these things, they were all driven by character defects. And that's how we lived. And to change that is a big deal. You know, it's not like a little matter, and I think that's why the 12 and 12 talks about it so much, as it separates, you know, from the men from the boys, you know, is because you have to be pretty manned up to do something like that, or women up. I know we have some women in here. And one of the things that I think about is I have to sometimes pray to be willing to be willing.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes, because I don't know, you know, I'm fearful. I'm, you know, I mean, if it's you know, security, that was one of my character defects, or insecurity, and I want to try to obtain more security, you know, I've got to step out on some faith, and I've got to do a lot of praying about it. And, you know, we'll talk more about it as we go through this, but there's, I love the way the book is laid out in the 12 and 12 like this, because it takes us on this journey, you know. It takes us, how do we get through this? How do we get to the next area? And this is a good start. You know, if you've got that foundation of willingness, which is the principle behind this step, then you can do it. You know, we can do it together. So that's it for me on this.
Mm-hmm. When ready, this is on, following on, this is the big book, page 76, and this is the seven-step prayer. When ready, we say something like this: "My Creator." I'm going to stop there for a moment, because I found out this is an amazing word in this book. And I thought it was a mistake when I first saw it, because I was an atheist. And I say, that's a religious concept. Turns out the Supreme Court agreed. In 1996, there was a case where a inmate was denied conjugal visits because he refused to go to an ASAP program that was loosely based on the Big Book. And he said that because that's a religion. And so the New York lower court said, no, that's not a religion. The New York appeals court said, no, that's not a religion. Supreme Court reversed it. And it's a very interesting, I do have on WeJoy.org, I've got the opinion of the Supreme Court. It's very interesting to see, because some of the words like creator that were in there, and that's Brent Bumas, the primary one right there, said once you start talking about that. So is AA a religion? Well, for the purposes of the, for, and that's why when AA cannot order people to go to, the courts cannot order people to go to AA meetings. They have to give them a secular alternative. And so this is from that 1996 case. Now, what has this got to do with sobriety and all that? This main thing for me here, the key to that word right there is when I realize I didn't create me. I didn't pick my parents. You know? I didn't pick my ancestors. How many ancestors do you have? How many of them had to do the right thing for you to even be existing right here? That's what I had to realize. And all of a sudden, I thought, where does pride go? If I realize I didn't create me, then everything I am is a gift. And then all of a sudden, this prayer takes on a new meaning for me. And it's that this life is an amazing thing. Each and every one of you are some of the most amazing matter on this side of the universe. We're sending out probes trying to find something like you. You know, if we found something to look like an ant on Mars, we'd spend $1 billion to go up there and try and get it back. You know, but we're here. And you know what? In my alcoholism, it wasn't enough. That wasn't enough. I had to have more. And then when I got more, it was too much or it wasn't enough. So I just wanted to spend that time on it, because it's that concept there, because it relates to pride. And once pride can go away, then this step can take on, it can actually work. If I think I'm the one working on my character defects and I have power to do that, then it has not worked well for me. So my Creator, I am now willing that you should have all of me, good and bad. I pray that you now remove from me every single defect of character which stands in the way of my usefulness to you and my fellows. It's interesting what it doesn't say. Take away all my difficult, you know, all my defects of character that stand in the way of me getting that new house, you know, or that particular outcome that I'm seeking. It turns out, and I've come to realize this, the highest rank I can achieve as a human being is servant. And crazy as it seems, the easiest thing I can ever be is servant. It's a lot easier than manager or director. Grant me strength as I go out from here to do your bidding. Amen. Now, if some people point out that the third step prayer doesn't have an amen, and they look at the third step, fourth, fifth, six and seven as one big long prayer. And Chuck Chamberlain, somebody called him and asked him about what is prayer. He said, "You're not going to like it." He said, "But go ahead, what is prayer?" And he says, "Every serious thought is a prayer." Isn't that interesting? It's sort of like, you know, God saying, "Hold on, hold on." He's down on his knees. The demon's praying. What an amazing thing. Better listen, you know. But I like that. Every serious thought is a prayer. You know? And it says, we have then completed step 7. Dana?
Yeah, you know, seventh step prayer, he walked through pretty well. But one of the things that kind of stuck out to me when I did that prayer is good and bad. You know, because I think there's a bit of good in all of us, regardless of what we were doing. You know, I mean, even when I was out there and stuff, I think there was some good inside of me. And God had something to do with that, just like I had all my self-will run riot that had all the bad things. So, God, I need you to take all of me, good and bad. And the way I work on the seventh step, and I do it today even, because I say my seventh step prayer every morning, when it comes to it says, please, you know, says remove every single defect of character, I stop there and I call them out. Like, is it judgmental? Is it fear? Is it selfishness? Is it loathing? Is it what character defects at this time in my life are paramount for me? What are getting me down? Remember I talked about it earlier, is, you know, what are these things that are getting in the way? And I want to identify them. You know, I don't want to just skim over that. And then, you know, this is a prayer. This book's full of prayers. There's a seventh step prayer, ninth step prayer, third step prayer. There's tons of them. Fear prayer, sex prayer. I mean, there's tons of them in there. And here's, you know, grant me strength as I go out from here to do thy bidding, you know, amen. And grant me strength. I need it, you know. I can't do this thing alone. And we've completed step 7. And there again, to me, step 7 is a living step, as all of them are. But it's one of the ones that I'm constantly working on, because I will not be rid of all my character defects. They get better, but I'm not rid of all of them, and I need help with that. So that's it.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, it was when I was with the wet drunk last night and I was talking with him, it was as though power was flowing through, not as though it was emanating from. And he was quite angry. He was yelling at me at times. And I felt like somebody with a baseball bat swinging at a cloud. You know? Because it was what was important is that, see, that's AA, you know. This thing's kind of a sideshow. You know, this is all about helping fit you to when you get into that situation, one-on-one with another alcoholic who's suffering. That's our primary purpose. So we're going to jump into the step 6 in the 12 and 12. And on this is a picture in the bottom of four people, kind of images with holding puzzle pieces together fitting in. Okay? And it's a lot of this is about fitting together. You know, doing God's will in so many ways is how I participate in fitting together with other people. And it's sort of, I play guitar, and it's one of the things that I need to work on more is playing with other people, you know, and melding in with their music and making harmony. Each one of us can play our own style, but we can play in harmony together. And Bill uses harmony when he kind of rewrote the St. Francis prayer, because in the Catholic version, harmony is not in there. But it's a great word for an alcoholic, to seek harmony. Dana, why don't you read this one, start out?
Sure. This is the step that separates the men from the boys. So declares a well-loved clergyman who is probably Father Ed Dowling. He goes on to explain why a person capable of enough willingness and honesty to try repeatedly step 6 on all his faults. And when I was reading that, I went to a passage in the big book, and this is right before we do step 5, and it says, they took inventory all right, but hung on some of the worst items in stock. They only thought they had lost their egoism and fear. They only thought they had humbled themselves, but they had not learned enough humility, fearlessness, and honesty in the sense we find it necessary until they told someone all their life story. You know, and I really tie that in to the book. And then it says, without any reservations whatever, has indeed come a long way spiritually, and is therefore entitled to be called a man who is sincerely trying to grow in the image and likeness of his own Creator. And that's what I'm trying to do. You know, Damon, you mentioned it earlier. You were talking about the servant. You know, and that's what I want to be. I want to be a servant. And, you know, in the big book and all this that's, you know, 52 times mentioned in the first 164 pages, it talks about working with others. And it doesn't say other alcoholics. You know, of course we know we do work with other alcoholics, but I work with others all day long. Is it my coworkers? Is it my family? Is it my friends? You know, and I want to be that servant, and I want to try to be more spiritual, you know, and as I go down this road of recovery. And it's all this process and this growth that we do by working the steps. And step 7 is certainly a big one, because when I'm in the way, I can't do anything. You know, I have to get out of the way and let God work through me. Okay? Go ahead, Damon.
And on the bottom of it, I have the two words of responsibility or excuses. You know, and I was one who, whenever a project went wrong where I was working, I wanted to find out who to blame. That also didn't make me very popular. And I could really figure out, you know, who to blame. But this neat about this program is to take responsibility. And it's neat when you look at the word, I have the ability to respond. And responding appropriately. Have you ever been told when you were drinking you didn't respond appropriately? And responding appropriately is kind of neat. I need help. And that's why I need to get in the rooms and stay in the rooms, as I see how people respond inappropriately. And I go, ooh, you know, but I also see how people respond appropriately. I've got one sponsor, but I've got many mentors. I like also this guy Craig, who was talking about, he was with an old-timer. Why? He said, why do they always meet at IHOP? But anyway, he said, he's talking with the old-timer, and the old-timer says, okay, kid, says, stick with the winners. Craig says, cool. He says, who are the winners? He goes, we take turns. And I like that. We do, you know. All of us is off at one time or another, you know. And that's why I need you.
And one thing I wanted to comment on, too, is, you know, this is something that I kind of picked up on this year, is the word excuses. I am not a perfect person, by no means. None of us are. And so, but things happen. So do I lay out a reason why it happened, or do I lay out an excuse why it happened? And what I really try to do is lay out a reason. I did this because. Not an excuse why. This is why, you know, this is my reason why I did it. And that sort of helps me along, because then it doesn't put me in trying to defend myself all the time. You know, it's just a reason. Things happen. You know, reasons. It's a reason why it happened. Go ahead.
So here we are. Now we're on 12 and 12, page 65. And what I'm trying to do is just pull out some of the essences. There's a lot in these two. But we're still in step 6. It says, since most of us are born with an abundance of natural desires. Anybody here have an abundance of natural desire? Okay, good. It isn't strange that we often let these far exceed their intended purpose when they drive us blindly, or we willfully demand that they supply us with more satisfactions or pleasures than are possible or due us. That is the point at which we depart from the degree of perfection that God wishes for us here on earth. This is the measure of our character defects, or if you wish, of our sins. So when we ask about what is a character defect, Bill is giving us, and this is what's neat, Bill doesn't define alcoholism. If I was going to write a book on alcoholism, I would define alcoholism. It's just like he doesn't. Also, if I was writing a book on alcoholism, my first step would be quit drinking. But his first step, first part says you can't quit. You cannot quit. Okay, well, then the other thing I'll do is arrange my life such that I won't have to drink. Second part of first step, you can't do that either. That won't work. My life's unmanageable. So there's a lot of neat things about this book, about what it says and what it doesn't say. So this idea of sin, and I have this connotation set with sin, but I found out that it comes from a Greek term of archery. Does anybody know about that? And archery, literally, you arch the arrows, and you're trying to hit people marching at you in a field. You've seen the old Spartan movies and all of that. And in order to practice, what they would do is they'd draw a circle out on a field, and then the trainees would be shooting and trying to hit the arrow into the center of the circle. And the distance they missed from the center of the circle was the sin. So it's missing the mark. What do we have? We try and practice these principles in all our affairs. Now the other question is, who's drawing the circle? You know, somebody else may be hitting their mark, and that they're not aiming at the same thing I've got. And who am I to judge by that? I need to just focus on my circle and my mark and try and make sure I'm aiming at the right place. So this idea is, it's about, this really ties into practicing principles in all our affairs. Dana.
Yeah, I mean, as I look through this, you know, in the 12 and 12, it talks about instincts gone astray. You know, I mean, all of us have instincts. I mean, that's just how we survive. That's what we do. But what happens is we take these alcoholics, we take these instincts to the extremes. And, you know, one of them they mention in here is perfection. You know, perfection is a character defect driven by ego. You know, and we try to be perfect, and when we're not. And one of the things that all of us love, I mean, we could sit down, we're going to go through a lot of character defects in the next few slides. But one of them is gratification, right? I mean, all of us love gratification. But the problem with alcoholics is instant gratification just isn't fast enough. You know? I mean, I want it now. And if I don't get it, I'm going to bang my high chair. You know how we act. Come on. All right, go ahead.
Okay. So we're now going to, this is a follow-up on that same page. I believe. So step six, we're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character, is AA's way of stating the best possible attitude one can take in order, to make a beginning on this lifetime job. This does not mean that we expect all our character defects to be lifted out of us as the drive to drink was. So I don't know about you, but for me it was 3 o'clock in the morning on August the 12th of 2004, and I'd quit drinking 2 days before. See, I was doing the quit drinking thing again, and I'd done that a number of times. And what would happen is I'd quit for a while, and I'd get a little restless, a little irritable, a little discontented, and it would start building up like a pressure cooker until I changed my mind about not drinking. And I take that drink and you know, that pressure would be released. So it was at that point I knew I couldn't do this again. And I said the three-word prayer of an atheist. And I said to the depths of, to my innermost self, I said, I need help. And it's when I reach that point that it takes me to being entirely ready. So I love Bill talks several different times about the best possible. And he was known several times to have told people the good is oftentimes the enemy of the best. And am I looking at sufficient or am I looking at best possible? Now, and am I willing to settle for comfortable when I could be effective? You know, to just be sober, or am I out there carrying the message to the alcoholic who still suffers? You know, which is, what is that? What should I be doing? Is it just about me being comfortable? So I this is that idea of best possible. Now, in terms of the perfection, what I realized is I had an imperfect definition of perfection. I thought this moment needed to be the way I expected this moment to be, and since it wasn't, God made a mistake making this moment. Little ego there, right? Now, what I've realized today, a perfect definition of perfection, for me at least, is you are perfectly you at this moment. There's nobody more perfectly you at this moment than you are at this moment, and that way I can cut you some slack. You know? And also, this moment is perfectly this moment. There's never been a moment more perfectly this moment than this moment. Now, anything else, whenever any other definition of perfection seems to be imperfect because it's me saying this moment needs to have been different. Now, one of the things that's perfect about this moment is that there's room for improvement. If there were no room for improvement, none of us would have jobs. None of us would have anything to do. And so when I look at it that way, it becomes a lot easier to be with my wife when she's telling me I need to wrap the chairs with the plastic in just a certain way. And I don't agree with her. Then I got upset. And then I went, wait a minute. But it's neat that they don't last so long anymore. You know, it's like a minute. Isn't that cool? That used to go for days. Dana.
Yeah, and I read through this, and one of the things that sticks out to me a lot is the is all of these defects of character. You know, I've got to get rid of all of them. They have no value anymore. You know, and last year when we were up here, we talked a little bit through 4 and 5, and I talked about the character defects like pinto mufflers. And for y'all that were here, they have no value. Nobody needs a pinto muffler anymore, right? So your character defects are the same way. And one of the things that I need to think about is this. I can't get impatient with it. You know, sometimes I want to, like you said, be perfect, you know, but this is a lifetime job. This is life instances change. Things change in our lives all the time. And depending on the circumstances and what's going on in our lives, what character defect may jump out to get us. So I'm always constantly working on this. And one of the things too is it says here, you know, that a lot of them go away. We know that when we do our 6 and 7 and pray about them, character defects go away, a lot of them. Some of them stick out, some of them don't, some of them come back. But what I don't want to do is set an unrealistic expectation. That's one of the things that I used to think, God, why aren't these gone? Why am I still racked with fear? You know, why does this still come up? And one of the things that I had to say is that's just the way it's supposed to be right now. Maybe I need to be working more on something. You know, and that's why, like I said earlier, you know, in my 7-step prayer, I always call out my character defects because I want to talk about it. I want to hear about it. I want to hear myself say them. You know, I want to know what's going on with me right now, and it's an easy way. And then I don't set an unrealistic expectation that, God, this is supposed to be gone. Well, maybe it isn't right now. Maybe I'm supposed to be working on it. So I really work hard on not setting my expectations too much and just doing what I think the next right thing is to do and working as hard as I can. And only inside of me do I know if I'm working as hard as I can. You know that. I mean, if you're not, you're not. Either you're honest or you're not honest. Either you're pregnant or you're not pregnant. Either you're working as hard as you can or you're not. You know, so, and sometimes I need to work harder. Thank you, Dane.
So now we're going to look at what I have done here on this slide is there's 2 pages or so in the 12 and 12. Where Bill kind of breaks these things out. And what I've tried to do is kind of break it down to where these are the actual, you know, words from the 12 and 12. So all I've done is just organize them a little bit. And on the top, it just says, what we must recognize now is that we exalt in some of our defects. We really love them, you know. And it's sort of like one of the Minions. You know, don't you like the Minions? They got little character defects, but they're cute. You know, and now on the left-hand side here are the character defects that Bill lists. Okay, and so he's got superiority, greed, lust, self-righteous anger, gossip, gluttony, envy, and sloth. So those are the ones Bill seems to me, from what I've looked at, that's what he's listed. And here's what he calls them: superiority. Who, for example, doesn't like to feel just a little superior to the next fellow or even quite a lot superior? And that's generally when I have a low opinion of myself and I need to look down on someone else so that I can lift myself up. And I don't want to be looking up either, because that's sort of like I'm not enough. If I was just like him or her, boy, then I would be happy. So I don't. It's neat. Bill talks about maybe we can get eye to eye with the world. Wouldn't it be neat to just be eye to eye? So, greed, we like to let greed masquerade as ambition. Puts on the mask. Oh, I'm just ambitious, you know. So, and lust, he says, speak love with their lips and believe what they say so that they can hide lust in a dark corner of their minds. So I don't necessarily know. Does anybody here want to get completely rid of lust? I don't know. I don't know. Self-righteous anger. Ooh, that's a good one. Ann Smith, Dr. Bob's wife, she kept a journal from 1933 to 1939, and in it she had 17 types of surrender, and one of them was surrender my rights. And it's sort of like, for me, my right to be upset. Wouldn't that be neat if I could just surrender my right to be upset? Gossip, a polite form of murder by character assassination, has its satisfactions for us too. And it's not one of the areas, I don't think I've ever cared about people enough to gossip about them. I think that was one of my character defects. Maybe I need to work on the other side, you know. Yeah, we don't gossip, we're just concerned. That's what it is. So. Gluttony, we call it taking our comfort, you know. Recently I've been doing something where I don't eat until about after 5 p.m. And it's just, well, I found out it was like getting kicked to death by rabbits. I was just nibbling, you know, here and there. And so I've been dropping down some. And it's actually during that time, there's a little bit of, it's like a fasting thing. And it's just the realization, I have all that I require. And I really have all that I require. And it's helped me a good deal here recently. Envy. Wishing for what we have not rather than working for it. Isn't that? It's when I separate them out, he really kind of nails it. Doesn't he get to the heart of it? And sloth. Consider, too, our talent for procrastination, which is really sloth in five syllables. And I like that idea of Procrastinators Anonymous. They haven't decided when they're going to meet, but they're... Dana.
No, I look at these character defects, and when we go through Bill's story, there's four things that Bill tried to get sober. He tried self-will, self-knowledge, fear, and what's the last one? I can't believe I just drew a blank. And geographic change. And you know, some of those things, if you put a healthy program or a solution behind it, are good. You know, I mean, we need certain things. And some of these here, if you put a healthy solution behind them, there's nothing wrong with them. The problem with us is we take them to the extreme on the other level, you know, and then they become injurious at best, you know. So that's all I have with those. You did a good job going through them. Thanks, Damon.
Now, one of the things that the way I look at this, and this is what's fun about with Dana and I in doing this, is I look at the 7th, 6th, and 7th as telling me I give myself permission to never work on my character defects ever again. And this is why. Because really, a character defect for me is the failure to practice a principle. And the Catholics have a concept called the contra virtues that go with the seven deadly sins. And the idea is that each one of my defects of character really has a corollary to what I should be doing. And if I focus on now, if I've got there's a bottle around here, and what's the easiest way to take air out of a water bottle? You fill it with water. You could try and suck the air out of it, you know, but you're just going to create a vacuum. And for me, when I take a character defect out, I'm creating a vacuum. I got lots of character defects that love to jump right in there. But if I'm practicing these principles in all my affairs, how much time will I have left for character defects? This is the tie to me between 12 and 6 and 7. So if I'm really committed to the best, then that's really what I need to focus on for me. Not doing something. It's like, don't think about the pink elephant, you know, and don't think about the 57 Chevy with a nick in the steering wheel. I mean, what do we think about the nick in the steering wheel? So for superiority, I look at that as really not practicing humility. I look at greed as not practicing charity. To realize that I truly have all that I require. And I have enough that I can give it away. Because I have a new employer being all-powerful. He provides what I need as long as I stay close to him. If I sincerely take that position, don't just play around, but sincerely, charity becomes very easy. Lust. Chastity. Now, I thought this was interesting because I thought chastity had like to do with a belt. You know, but it really says something that ties into the four-step sex inventory. If you look at, here's the definition, sexual conduct of a person that is deemed praiseworthy and virtuous according to the moral standards and guidelines of their culture, civilization, or religion. So when I'm looking at doing the four-step sex inventory, what does it say? It says, in this way we develop a sane and sound ideal of our future sex life. So chastity is really a sane and sound ideal of our future sex life. So Bill's already given us a tool in the fourth step to handle this. And then all he asks us to do is ask God to pray for that we be willing to work towards it. And then here, self-righteous anger, patience. Love and tolerance is our code. And if I can just be patient and wait, because remember, I've got a new employer being all-powerful. He provides what I need as long as I stay close to him. And it's easy to be patient then. Because a lot of times, God isn't saying yes or no. He's saying not yet. Gossip. Kindness. Kindness is an interesting word. It's related to kin in Anglo-Saxon, which means family. And if I realize that I can be kind to people because we're all part of one body, there's not really a you and me. There's a us. And that's in the program. And that's in everybody I meet, the convenience store person, the person at the checkout counter. I love to go in the checkout counter and on Sundays. And I go, thank you for working on a Sunday. And this one lady, she said, well, I just had to work anyway. I said, but I wanted to thank you anyway. And I started walking away. And I sensed something. And I don't know if you guys, this realm of the spirit is very interesting. I sensed something. And I turn around and look, and she's looking at me. And I said, yes. And she said, I've worked here 12 years, and nobody's ever thanked me for working on a Sunday. And I said, well, I just want to say I appreciated it. And you know, I didn't think of that. I got that from hearing somebody else do it. So it's kindness. Gluttony, temperance, moderation, or voluntary self-restraint. I don't think we're very good at that, but... But it really is, at some point, in terms of the eating, I can't quit eating entirely. You know, or I'm going to die. So I need, in certain things, I need to have them, just like Dana was saying. They're out of, they're out of order. Envy. The opposite of envy is gratitude. Gratitude for what I've got. I've got a friend that wrote a book on gratitude and using it in teaching. And it turns out it's become one of the amazing tools for teaching kids how to learn. Is to teach them how to be grateful. He's been doing a gratitude list for 15 years. This one lady, he just had all this peace about her, and she said, how do you do that? Gratitude list. He said, how do you do that? And she said, well, I just write 5 things down every day that I'm grateful for. She said, well, I do have one rule. He said, what's that? He says, no repeats. Really? 365 days a year, 15 years, 5 items. No repeats. Well, it's an infinite universe. Right? It's a big world. There's lots of experiences. I like what and he's been passing it on to fourth grade kids and then on to their. Now he's teaching teachers how to do that. Pretty cool. And the last sloth is diligence. Isn't that interesting? And that just says the effort to do one's part is diligence. Just to do my part. Remember the guys with the puzzle pieces fitting together again? Just to try and figure out what my part is, Dana?
You know, when Damon brought this slide up, it started me thinking. You know what I mean? It's like when we go through the big book and we talk a little bit about the price that has to be paid for sobriety is the destruction of self-centeredness. And so what I ask people to do and what I do myself is to do 5 selfless acts a day. And you can't tell anybody about them, you know, then it becomes a habit. In other words, you know, because it doesn't feel good when you don't do it, you know, and so I try to do 5 selfless acts a day, and they're relatively easy to do if you think about it, I mean, open the door for somebody, tell somebody at the grocery store, thank you for working on Sunday. And I always tell people, if you let a school bus of people in, it doesn't clear you out for the week. So I always think, I know how y'all act. So, just let somebody in traffic. Whatever you do, do 5 selfless acts. So maybe we should
I should, and I guess y'all should because y'all are here with us, but you know, maybe I should be practicing a little bit more humility and charity and a lot of those things every day. And I guarantee you if I practice them more, they'll become more of a way of life, just like AA has become a way of life for us, you know? That's why I like these workshops because, you know, we all go to our meetings and we all do these things, but when do we really take time out to take a deep dive into 6 and 7 and to really think how we can do it? And that's what we're doing today, is taking that deep dive in. And I this out of all the slides, this was probably one of my favorites that came up because it gives me some action, you know, and I've always got to be doing something. So that's it. Thank you, Damon.
Cool. So here's where we bring our little minion in. And this is on page 67 and 68 on the 12 and 12. Nearly anyone could submit a good list of such defects as these, and few of us would seriously think of giving them up, at least until they cause us excessive misery. We're okay with a little misery, but excessive misery, no, we're not going to do that. Some people, of course, may conclude that they are indeed ready to have all such defects taken from them. But even these people, if they construct a list of still milder defects, will be obliged to admit that they prefer to hang on to some of them. Thus, our little smiling minion, you know, there. Some of these are elegant. Any comment on this one?
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, says they cause us excessive misery. And in the big book, they talk about beat us into a state of reasonableness. You know what I mean? And that's, you know, I don't let go of anything unless it has claw marks on it. I don't know why I do that, but I do. And, you know, I've got to let go of this stuff. And just like my drinking, I if it didn't cause me misery, I probably wouldn't be standing with y'all tonight because I'd probably still be out there drinking. It caused me misery. And these character defects, as I went back earlier when I was talking about the road gets narrower and the longer you've been sober, and I just don't like the way they make me feel. You know, I just don't like the way character defects make me feel anymore. You know what I mean? I just got to get away from them, and I don't know what to do except what we do here to help get rid of them. You know, but thank you.
Mm-hmm. So now we're finishing up step 6, and it says, therefore, it seems plain that few of us can quickly or easily become ready to aim at spiritual and moral perfection. We want to settle for only as much perfection as will get us by in life, according, of course, to our various and sundry ideas of what will get us by. So the difference, and this is where I love when he talks about the definition here, is the definition between the boys and the men and the women and the, you know, the girls, is this. It says, so the difference between the boys and the men is the difference between striving for a self-determined objective and the perfect objective, which is of God. So, you know, as a child, I had everything provided for me, or I could make excuses for things. But now, today, I need to be a leader. I need to be in the family. I need to, and I get to be this because I have developed these skills over time. And so I can shift over to finding out what I ought to do, not what I want to do. Dana.
The only thing that sticks out to me is that self-determined objective, which is self-will to me. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's and he says it another way on page 63. He says, our little plans and designs. I love that. And they're little. You know, they're like coloring crayons and paper dolls, you know, compared to what actually is happening. You know, this guy's last night was just talking about, I have to get there. I said, there is no there to get to. What do you mean? There's no there. I have an idea what there should look like, but every time I get there, it's here. And it's a lot different than what I expected it to be. So there's no there to get to, you know, and then I'll be happy. I love it. I get the guys call me up, da-da-da-da-da, and then I go, and then you'll be happy. Well, no, not exactly. And da-da-da-da-da, and then you'll be happy. Well, no, not exactly. Step 7, humbly ask him to remove our shortcomings. Bill once was asked the difference between shortcomings and character defects, and he said he didn't like to use the same word twice. Although I have kind of like one guy who said defects of character have to do with, there's one side of a defect that has to do with omission and one that has to do with commission. Okay, a shortcoming is something that I'm not doing, something that I'm lacking. And a defect of character is something I'm acting out on. So I kind of like that idea because it kind of can break down some of these character defects and you can see that there's two components. Some of them is not doing anything can be a shortcoming. And a defect of character can be where I'm acting out. So since this step so specifically concerns itself with humility, we should pause here to consider what humility is and what the practice of it can mean to us. Indeed, the attainment of great humility is the foundation principle of each of AA's 12 steps. Do you believe that? Again, the creator concept. If I didn't create me, everything I am is a gift. So when I take that attitude, it says, indeed, the attainment of great humility is the foundation principle of each of AA's 12 steps. For without some degree of humility, no alcoholic can stay sober at all. That's a pretty broad statement. Nearly all AAs have found, too, that unless they develop much more of this precious quality than may be required just for sobriety, that's that idea of good is oftentimes the enemy of the best, they still haven't much chance of becoming truly happy. See, I didn't want the car. I wanted the quality of life I thought I was going to have when I got the car. I didn't want the house. I wanted the quality of life I thought I was going to get when I got the house. What's very neat today is I realize that the quality of my life has nothing to do with my circumstances. Mother Teresa was an excellent example of that. She lived in the slums of Calcutta, one of the hell holes on earth. And what was the quality of her life? World renowned. That's the message for me right there. That my quality of my life doesn't have anything to do with my circumstances. It has everything to do with the story I tell myself about my circumstances. There's this lady who said, the universe is not composed of atoms, it's composed of stories. We even have a story about atoms. Started with a wino in 600 BC. He loved to drink wine and figured out, he said, there must be something called atoms. You must have to stop breaking things down at some point. In the 1800s, we started getting another story. Now we got the Hadron Collider, and we're having a new story about atoms, but it's still, nobody's seen one. All we have is a story. And when I realize that all my life is just a lot of stories, what I think you're thinking of me right now is not what you're thinking of me. It's just a story. And then I just don't take myself so damn serious. Dana.
Yeah, you know, the first word in the things, humility, and I want to read you something out of the 12 and 12. It says amounts to a clear recognition of what and who we are, followed by a sincere attempt to become what we could be. Therefore, our first practical move towards humility must consist of recognizing our deficiencies. No defect can be corrected unless we clearly see it as what it is. But we still have to do more and then see. The objective is to look at our character defects, and that's what step four is. And so that's what it is. And then the last thing that he puts down in here is it talks about we can meet any emergency. And in the big book, you've heard it said time and time again, it says certain trials and low spots. It says, designed for living that works in rough going. We are going to have things that happen in our lives. We're going to have emergencies. We're going to have trials. We're going to have low spots. We're going to have these character defects that come back up. And so it's just something to think about because they are going to happen. Go ahead.
And this reading we're on is on page 70 of the 12 and 12. And I have this symbol on there of the bamboo. And I like this quote, be like the bamboo. The higher you grow, the deeper you bow. So this is now on page 71, and have an image of a water fountain with just one little drop coming off of it. Certainly no alcoholic and surely no member of AA wants to deprecate, and that simply means express disapproval of, material achievement. Okay? There's a lot of things. I like the electricity. I like the fact we got lights and air conditioning. In fact, I think Atlanta should have been called Freon, just because without it, I don't think it ever would have grown the way it did. Nor do we enter into debate with the many who still so passionately cling to the belief that to satisfy our basic natural desires is the main object of life. But we are sure that no class of people in the world ever made a worse mess of trying to live by this formula than alcoholics, right? So for thousands of years, we have been demanding more than our share of security, prestige, and romance. And so when we seem to be succeeding, we drank to dream still greater dreams. When we were frustrated, even in part, we drank for oblivion. Never was there enough of what we thought we wanted. And I call this the disease of not enough. And I don't know that necessarily we're the sole, sufferers from that. I think that, this, the nature of what makes me an alcoholic is the effect that alcohol has on me. But that idea of not enough has to do with me. And what I can do about not enough is instead of trying to accumulate enough and get all of that right, I can change my story about enough. And that becomes a very easy thing to do. Dana.
Damon started out talking a little bit about he did some 12-step work with a guy last night that's had double-digit sobriety and went back out and he's in his garage and he's drinking and he's miserable. And, I remember being that person. Maybe not the guy in the garage, but I remember that feeling. I know what it feels like to be that down and out with alcohol and that desperate and that miserable and that pain. And then when I was in that pain, what was enough to me? Well, probably enough to me at that time was to not be in that pain anymore. But then life happens and then enough changes its definition. You know what I mean? I need more of this. I need a faster car. I need a bigger house. I need this. I need that. And, and in all reality, enough for me today is to be sober and to be healthy. Those are the two things that would make my life complete. And I need to remember that. I need to think about that kind of stuff because sometimes I get, used the word greed earlier, I get greedy, and I think I need something that I don't need, and I don't need anything more than, I always tell people, and I do know this to my core, I like my stuff. Probably most of us do. I mean, I like a comfortable home to stay in. I like a safe and nice automobile to drive, and I like my friends and all this stuff. Take it all away. I don't care. Just don't take my sobriety and my health away. And I know that. And that's that psychic change they talk about in the book. That's that change of thinking because I always thought all that other stuff would make me. All that stuff is just, it's just stuff. It's not that big of a deal, And I needed to hear that story this morning because that's why we do these things. That's why we work around newcomers all the time. We never forget what's most important. And, that is most important that we're sober today and healthy, because if I'm not healthy, it's hard to be sober, when my faculty's about me. Go ahead.
Yeah, I remember him saying, "I'm coming unglued." And I said, "That's fantastic." Fantastic. Whatever the glue, because we come in here and it's our brokenness that I can be human. I'm the guy who was drinking a fifth of vodka a day, isolated in my house, cutting every thread I had connecting me to the world. And the loneliness. I think an alcoholic in our cups is the loneliest creature on earth. And however bad I think it was worse. And nothing will so much ensure immunity from alcohol as intensive work with other alcoholics. It works when all other methods fail. So, I'm going to go to character building. Isn't that a neat idea? The idea that character building, and I have a little symbol here of character with all these cranes around trying to build character, that character building in of itself is a goal. That's part of what Bill's talking about here in 7, building of character. Now, there's another book that talks about I have a new way of thinking which leads to new actions. I repeat the actions over and over again, and those become habits. And the collection of habits is my character. So a new way of thinking leads to new actions. I repeat those actions over and over again, and they become habits. And the collection of my habits is my character. Now the question becomes, what is the quality of my habits? And so much of what we work on in this program, what I like to work on, is what's the quality of my habits. And I measure that today as how it impacts those around me. I found out that I don't work on my quality of my life ever again. I'd be great if I just never worked on the quality of my life. If I can help work on the quality of your life and the lives of my children and my wife and the people around me, then I live in a more quality world, and I get it by reflection. Whenever I work on the quality of my own life, most of the time I screw it up. And that's why altruism is really built with this. Dr. Silkworth called this an altruistic society. To do for others without expectation of return. So in all these strivings, so many of them well-intentioned, our crippling handicap had been our lack of humility. We had lacked the perspective to see that character building and spiritual values had to come first. Isn't that interesting? It's not the bank account, it's not the house, it's not managing what you think of me or any of that. What if those were first in my life? Character building and these spiritual values. Whenever I've done that, it's been very successful. When I haven't done it, it's been a lot of work. I think one of the great traits I have is laziness. This is the easier, softer way. It really is. It takes less work to do it. So, and that material satisfactions were not the purpose of living. My sponsor said he never saw a hearse with a U-Haul attached to it. And quite characteristically, we have gone all out in confusing the ends with the means. I do business consulting, and even with sales, I say, don't get into the outcome. If you get the process right, the outcome will take care of itself. If you just focus on the outcome, you may get that outcome, but you may miss 12 other outcomes that were much better than that one. And it's the same way, I think, with this program. So if I get my right character right, if I get the spiritual values right, then all of the outcomes in my life become much higher quality. So, yes, in the ends with the means. Instead of regarding the satisfaction of our material desires as the means by which we could live and function as human beings, we had taken these satisfactions to be the final end and aim of life rather than a measure of the quality of these other character building and spiritual laws.
You know, there's a commercial, I hear it on the radio all the time, and I can't think of the name of the company, but basically they're a marketing company. They talk about marketing your company, you know, and it talks a little bit about building that image, and that image that you build portrays what your brand is to be. And I think that's what we do as humans, you know, we want people to see us in a certain way, right? You know, we want to build our character and stuff like that. And the challenge that we ran into when we were drinking is it was so false. There was no reality to it. You know, I mean, we would build we'd put this mask on and we'd be these people that we thought people wanted us to see. And then they became so inconsistent when we were drunk or we were using, you know, that we just couldn't stand to see ourselves. And now that, you know, it talks a little about being able to look the world in the eyes again. And now the character that I've built, I can look the world in the eye. There is no inconsistency. I am what I am, as Popeye says. You know what I mean? I am what I am, and there's no hidden secrets. And there's no skeletons in my closet or anything like that. And that's that character that I've worked really hard to build. And that's all I have with that.
So here we are now on page 72. This lack of anchorage to any permanent values. This is that idea that sometimes I would use. Bill talks about in that area in 62, or actually on 61, where he says that sometimes our actor may be quite virtuous, you know, kind and considerate. Other times, you know, egotistical. That's when I'm using principles as a weapon, you know, to get what I want. Rather than character building for the purpose of character building. Spiritual values and character building are related in that way because they become who I am, not what I'm trying to get. So this blindness to the true purpose of our lives produced another bad result. For just so long as we were convinced that we could live exclusively by our own individual strength and intelligence. For just that long was a working faith in a higher power impossible. You know, I used to think that my mind could get me out of any scrape it got it into. And then I hit alcoholism. And it wasn't very much use at all. In fact, it was a liability. This was true even when we believed that God existed. We could actually have earnest religious beliefs which remained barren because we were still trying to play God ourselves. And that's the outcome business. For me, as long as we placed self-reliance first, a genuine reliance upon a higher power was out of the question. And that reliance is in producing outcomes. That's what it's all, you know, rather have the outcome be character building and making these spiritual laws be a part of my design for living. If that's my, that's an income rather than an outcome because it's something that's inside me. And then I leave all of the outcomes up because if I do things with kindness and integrity, the results are always favorable. Now, I can't rob a bank with kindness and integrity. I really can't gossip about you behind your back with kindness and integrity. But if I that limits what I can do, but not very much, because there's an infinite number of directions I can go from here. And if I cut out half of them because I can't do them with kindness and integrity, I still have an infinite number of directions I can go. And all of them will result in a favorable outcome. I just don't know what those outcomes will be. But I don't care if things don't work out the way I planned, as long as the results are beyond my wildest dreams. Anybody okay with that? So, and that really is, it's that basic ingredient of all humility, a desire to seek and do God's will was missing. And that just says, how was I put together? Dana was pointing it out. If I want to know what God's will for me is, look at how I was put together, the God-given talents that I was given. Dana.
Yeah, the couple things in there is reliance, the word reliance, and I would have liked to have seen the word faith in there, you know, because it is faith. And then it says, in the end, it says that basic ingredient of all humility is a desire to seek and do God's will. You know, for me, I want to do God's will. And I'm an analytical thinker. I like to see things written out. And so what I figured is, if I'm practicing the principles of honesty, hope, faith, courage, integrity, willingness, humility, brotherly love, perseverance, awareness in God, and awareness of God and service, if I am practicing those principles, I'm in the middle of God's will. That's just an easy way for me to figure out. And if I'm not, if I'm finding that disease or that discomfort or I'm restless, irritable, and discontent or something like that, chances are I'm not practicing one of those principles. Just about every time I can guarantee it and I can correct it. Thank you.
Yeah. For me, it became very clear. This works for me. God's will for me is a how, not a what. You see, and if I just practice with kindness and integrity, I'm free to then pick whichever one of those things I want to do that matches that. And so it becomes now easy for me to balance God's will and my will. God's will is a how, not a what. It's not some little path I have to follow, otherwise I'm outside of God's will. It's broader. Page 74. But when we have taken a square look at some of these defects, have discussed them with another, step 5, you know, step 4, step 5, and have become willing to have them removed, step 6, our thinking about humility commences to have a wider meaning. By this time, in all probability, we have gained some measure of release from our more devastating handicaps. We enjoy moments in which there is something like real peace of mind. You know, I can do a magic trick today. You want to see my magic trick? Nothing. You ever heard the sound of silence? What would the sound of silence? Isn't that beautiful in our meditations in the morning? I set up outside of, went on a trip after we went to the Wilson House. We wound up on Marblehead just across from Salem, Massachusetts. And we were at this Airbnb and went just down the street and out on this little dock, and I got to watch the sunset with all the sunrise coming up. And this cormorant was this diving in bird and fish, and just be silent. Isn't that, man, the peace of mind. Because see, this spiritual growth is largely a process of subtraction, not addition. And that's what this can be, peace of mind. To those of us who have hitherto known only excitement, depression, or anxiety, when I saw excitement on page 88, I went, hey, I thought that's what I was going after. What do you mean? No, but he's talking about lightning and thunder in the brain excitement. No, don't want it. In other words, to all of us, this newfound peace is a priceless gift. Not something I can claim, but because I had that willingness given to me, the rest became inevitable if I followed it. Where humility had formerly stood for a force feeding on humble pie, it now begins to mean the nourishing ingredient which can give us serenity. Dana.
Yeah, you know, here it talks a little bit about, to those of us who've only known excitement, depression, and anxiety, and I know what that feels like. You know, I know a lot of people probably could define those words, but I know what it feels like. And here it says we know something like a real peace of mind. And my question is, what were we looking for, a drink and a drug? What were we looking for in that? We were looking for a peace of mind. We were looking for serenity. We were looking for peace. And it was never obtainable because it was always followed by guilt, shame, and remorse. Always. And to me, you know, I have no need to look inside a bottle anymore or a drug or anything like that, because it's not going to give me the peace of mind that I've found in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. I just know it to my core. And there again, I go back to, that's that psychic change that we all work so hard for in here. Go ahead.
Page 76. The seventh step is where we make the change in our attitude, which permits us, with humility as our guide, to move out from ourselves towards others and towards God. That's changing the story. What does an attitude change but change the story? And it can, you know, there are plausible stories. There's many plausible stories about what's going on at this moment. I can choose the one that adds quality to the lives of the people around me. The whole emphasis of step 7 is on humility. It's really saying to us that we now ought to be willing to try humility in seeking the removal of our other shortcomings, just as we did when we admitted we were powerless over alcohol and came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Bill defines sanity as a lack of insanity as a lack of proportion. When Jim puts the whiskey in the milk, an inability to think straight. Sanity, therefore, must be proportion. And all of these characters, what are we talking about? There is proportion. And to seek that in our lives. So if that degree of humility can enable us to find the grace by which such a deadly obsession could be banished, then there must be hope of the same result respecting any other problem we could possibly have. Dana?
Yeah. The thing that I think about here is, you know, and I think all of us in this room can relate to that obsession, being that obsessed with alcohol. I mean, you can see your life crumbling around you. It's absolutely miserable, you know, and you still have that obsession to do it over and over again. And I often talk a little bit about psychic change. You've heard me talk about it quite a few times in here, and it's that change of thinking. And I have very clear-cut memories of the first thing that I thought of when I came to in the morning was drinking. I was obsessed with it. I did it over and over again for many years. I never think about drinking anymore. So if God can remove that, what about these little petty character defects that seem to engulf me so much? I know that He can do those. And one thing I'd like to close with is that, you know, it says here, sanity. It says, I saw a word in here, it said sanity. Mm-hmm. And I always ask people, I say, what is insanity? And I always get the same answer. It's doing the same thing over and over again and expecting different results. But that isn't. Sanity is being able to differentiate the truth from the false. It's not believing the lie. if you believe the lie, then insanity happens again. You do the same thing over and over again and expect different results. When I, in my step two, got restored to sanity, I don't believe the lie anymore. I don't believe I can just have one. It's going to be different this time. To my core, I know and believe that drinking has no value to me anymore. I know that. I have been restored to sanity. I know that as sure as I'm standing here, as sure as I breathe my next breath. You know, and if I can go from, if I can start there, you know, if I can admit I'm powerless over alcohol, my life's unmanageable, and if I don't believe the lie anymore, I've got a good chance at working everything else that I need to work in here. Thank you, Dan.
Thank you. And thank you all for sharing this with us, and I wish you peace.